Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
That's Jimmy Stein. I'm Clint Lamb, and this is the Bama Online YouTube channel. Jimmy, let's just dive right in. I mean, obviously, we got to see practice yesterday. It was the second practice that we've been able to watch. It was the fifth overall practice, so they're working their way through the spring pretty quickly. This is all going pretty fast, but I think some of the comparisons from the first practice that we got to see versus yesterday, we can talk about some of those, discuss maybe why some of the things are happening that we're witnessing. But the number one thing that I want to talk about, and it's something that we've already addressed here on the YouTube channel, you and I haven't had a chance to discuss it, but it has been talked about at length, and that's Caden Proctor and his expected return to Alabama's program. First of all, just take me through your thought process when you learned that that was going to be happening and what you think that that means for Alabama's offensive line.
Well, I was surprised like anyone else. I think we all, it's obviously a highly unique situation. I mean, I think we'd be hard pressed to come up with another example. Obviously college football's changed a lot in the last 3 years. And, but even then this seems unprecedented or certainly as it relates to Alabama, but I was very, very happy for Alabama. This is big time. I think we all knew that tackle was a position they were going to target in the portal when spring practice was over, right? I mean, they had to go get a starting tackle in the portal. Well, I don't know that you could have handpicked someone any better. I mean, in terms of his upside and ceiling, which is pretty unlimited, he's got a comfortability factor. These are his teammates. These are his brothers. These are guys he's already played with. Yes, it'll be a transition to the new staff. But he's a smart kid. I don't think that would take long. He played right away as a true freshman in a new system 1 year ago. So he's already proven he can adapt quickly and win a spot quickly in a new offense. But the most important thing is just that he's a good player. I know that there were some struggles last year. He wasn't one of the best left tackles in the SEC last year. But there's reasons, right? A couple reasons. Number one, a little heavy. Some of that was by staff design. Some of that was just the fact that he was a freshman and hadn't been in the program very long. But I think most of his struggles were, frankly, just a directly tied to the fact he's an 18-year-old true freshman. An 18-year-old true freshman generally have no business starting in this league, especially at the line of scrimmage. So this is a kid who's thrown into the deep end of the pool with no floaty and is a little heavy. And then what happened? Over the course of the season, he improved. Look, I watched the replay of that Alabama-Georgia, best team Alabama played all year, Georgia, in my opinion. I know that might offend some people because Alabama played the national champions in Michigan and Alabama played Texas, which was a playoff team earlier in the year. I think the best team Alabama played all year, in my opinion, is Georgia Bulldogs. And Caden Proctor, I felt in that game, was Alabama's best offensive lineman that day. He did a great job against super elite competition in game 13, which is typical for a true freshman, right? Who's going to start out struggling, who's going to have a struggle game for sure. Arkansas for him, I thought was pretty rough in particular. But by the end of the year, he wasn't a true freshman anymore. And we got a real glimpse of what the future was going to be for Caden Proctor in that game. Now just imagine him with professional strength and conditioning for a year or two. Imagine working with these professional offensive line coaches for a year or two. I think he can be, I'm not going to say emphatically because you never know, but I think he can be a three and done first round pick. So getting a kid like Proctor out of the portal was a goal, but it's really a home run for all those reasons, those comfortability reasons, the fact he's been here. It couldn't have gone any better for Alabama in terms of adding a tackle out of the portal.
Yeah, that's exactly what I said in the article that I wrote about it. Just when you think about Alabama needed a starting caliber tackle. Not necessarily had it been anybody else, not necessarily an automatic starter. Like, you still got to earn it. And Caden Proctor is going to need to earn it. But you needed a guy who could come in and you felt confident that they could compete for a starting job. Because even though we all liked the talent in that room with some of the players that they have coming back and maybe some of the guys that they added, you didn't feel great about the experience factor. And that's another part of this that I want to discuss, because we talk about his comfort level with his teammates, with, you know, the Tuscaloosa area. He knows the restaurants he likes. He knows the places that he likes to go enjoy himself on the weekends and relax. He knows a lot of people outside of just football, you know, on campus now, I'm sure, getting back around them. I mean, I will say, me personally, after my first semester at Birmingham Southern, I really, up until the semester was over, I hated it. I didn't want to be there. I wanted to transfer to Alabama. That was the plan. And I got home from for Christmas break. We finished up the semester, got home, got to hit the reset button a little bit. I was planning to go back for one more semester, but before that semester even began, I started to miss things about BSC. You know, some of my fraternity brothers that I'd gotten close with, obviously I had a girlfriend there, was missing her. And then I, slowly over the course of that Christmas break, there was something that was desirable about going back to Birmingham Southern. And I still had planned to leave, but, you know, there was, I didn't dread being there anymore. I think that Caden Proctor kind of dealt with something similar. You know, he gets to Alabama for a semester. Obviously, he was there in the spring as well, but he goes through the season. He gets done. He's homesick. He probably wants to leave. You know, he gets away from everything. And then I think he realizes when he put that distance between him and some of his friends that he had made at Alabama, and just some of those same situations where you, there was a comfort level that had started to grow. And now, even though he was familiar with the state of Iowa, he hadn't been in the Iowa football program and he didn't know a ton of those guys probably. And so there was a little bit of uncomfort, you know, on that side of things. And so I think that, you know, he realized, actually, I think Alabama's the place I want to be. I don't know that for a fact, but I just, as I'm hearing how things unfolded, I was reminded of how I felt too. You know, just being a young kid, getting to college and not really liking the situation I was in until it was removed for a little while and I got a little bit of distance. And then you start appreciating some of the things that you had more. And I was excited to get back for that second semester. And it seemed like that, you know, Caden Proctor was excited to hang out with some of his teammates and then, of course, made the decision. But to get back to what we were discussing, the experience factor, I think, is massive with this, because you had already lost J.C. Latham. You had already lost Seth McLaughlin, multi-year starters, very good players. Well, you know, very good as far as J.C. Latham. I think Seth McLaughlin is a good player, but the snapping issues were obviously a major problem. But, you know, they're two veteran players. And on top of that, you lost a second tackle. So you were going to have to replace both of them and your communicator and probably one of the most important positions on your offensive line in your center. You got your two guards back in Tyler Booker and Jaden Roberts, but that's a lot to deal with. And now that you've added Caden Proctor back to that room, assuming he earns a starting job again, now you've got three offensive linemen from that group last year. Plus you've added Parker Brailsford, who's familiar with the, you know, Kalen DeBoer coaching staff, or at least the offensive coaching staff for the most part. And, you know, he's got experience playing major college football. And so now you've got four experienced guys, three who are very familiar with each other. I do wish that Caden Proctor wouldn't have left, though, because I do feel like that this spring would have been really important for him and his development. I'll be curious to see how that affects him, if it affects him. But I do think overall it was a home run get for Alabama.
And it really solidifies the group as a whole, as you pointed out. Now you got three guys back from last year and three promising guys, not just three players back, three guys with a lot of upside in Booker and Roberts and Proctor. I mean, these are potentially big-time players. And then you're adding a guy who was an all-conference player in the Pac-12 and Parker Brailsford. Kind of, you know, he'll be, as he was in the Pac-12, sort of an all-star candidate. Now you've kind of reduced the offensive line to one question mark, and it's a pretty big question mark, because there's no experienced answer there. It might be Elijah Pritchett. I know you are high on Wilkin Formby being a really good fit in this particular Washington offense, and I couldn't agree more. I think that maybe under the old offense, under the Saban-Wolford deal, I might have gone with Miles McVay over Formby, but I think maybe in the Washington offense, let's throw it around a lot. Let's get some real good pass blockers out on an island there. Maybe Wilkin Formby might be the guy over McVay, and I think that's an interesting conversation. But Proctor, it's so big in terms of not just his comfort, as you point out, his comfort with being back, because this is sort of a second home for him now, but just the comfortability that Booker has and Jaden Roberts has. I mean, the offensive line is a team within the team, and there has to be some chemistry there. And the fact that they're all back together, again, it's just a home run. Alabama could have gone to the portal this spring and found a good player. Let's just pick some wildly fictitious thing and gone and got maybe the best tackle in all of the American Athletic Conference. And maybe that's who you get out of the portal. That kid would not be comfortable here. Alabama would be brand new for him. He doesn't know. He's not buds with Tyler Booker and Jaden Roberts and Wilkin Formby and Miles McVay. And third, the guy probably wasn't a five-star projected three-and-done first-round pick either, or he wouldn't be in the American Athletic Conference. And let's also remember this one thing about shopping in the portal. Unless you're going to the portal and getting a young guy, if you're going to the portal and getting a guy that's been in college football for 3 or 4 years, how great could he be? Because the true greats, they're in the NFL after 3 years or 4 years. They're not sitting in the portal, you know, still trying to prove themselves to NFL scouts. So in that sense, that's why this Proctor thing, I don't know that Alabama could have gotten a guy any better than Proctor. Then throw in the fact that they already know him, and he's obviously, to your point, so at least somewhat comfortable here. He clearly had some, I don't know, homesickness issues is what we've heard, you know, time and again. That's understandable. Obviously, I went off to college. I went to Alabama, but, you know, I missed home too. I was 4 hours from home for the first time, and there were times that when you're 18 and being hours away from mom is sort of hard, you know, when everything's back home for you. And I'm sure Caden, just like a lot of our players, have experienced that over the years. But in the end, I think one thing that he saw was Alabama was hard. Let's remember this about Proctor too, Clint. He probably was the most dominant player in his hometown and on his school and on his teams his whole life. How often did he ever get beat in his whole life? Then he gets to Alabama and he's beat in practice. He struggles to get his teammates blocked in practice. He struggles to win the job. Elijah Pritchett, you know, kind of was tied with him for a while as to who would be the starting left tackle. Then he gets in a game, gives up multiple sacks in a game. I bet that had never happened to him in his life. I mean, Alabama was a real struggle for him, as it would be for any true freshman that's playing in the SEC. I'm sure he had some doubts for a while, like, do I really belong here? I might be way better off back at Iowa, where things seemed a little easier for me than they are here. This is hard. But maybe after some reflection, he realized, you know what? I was a much better player against Georgia than I was against Arkansas. I really grew when I was at Alabama. Maybe that's why I came to Alabama, because it was hard, and it's preparing me for what I hope to see in the National Football League in a couple of years. And maybe I won't get that at Iowa. Maybe he goes to Iowa. He's on the Iowa practice field, where they clearly have some good players. Let's not pretend like Iowa is William and Mary. I mean, this is a top 25 type program. Lucas consistently Van Ness. Year in and year out. They're pretty good. And the offensive line coaching there is outstanding. He's got a head coach who was a former NFL offensive line guy, and Iowa's producing offensive linemen to the NFL every single year. So let's not pretend Iowa was some FCS school. That's legitimate big-time football there. But it's also not Alabama in terms of what you're facing on the practice field every day. Nick Saban said it time and time again when he was here that, wow, the great benefit we provide to these guys is they're practicing against future pros every day, and it's making them better. And I'm guessing ultimately that may have won the day with Proctor. Alabama was just making me a better player.
Yeah, and if you talk to NFL personnel, you know, decision makers and things of that nature that work for these NFL teams, one of the first things they're going to ask if you're a coach, and we've heard this a lot. I think Kirby Smart recently said this. He's been saying it, but I've heard an interview recently where he said it, where it's like one of the first things you're going to get asked is, we need offensive linemen. Like, you know, just right now, that position in the NFL, there's a shortage of good quality offensive linemen. And that, you know, you talk about the quarterback play and the fact that it's gotten better and you've got guys all there at the top. And it's like, you can have a great quarterback, but if you can't keep him protected, well, how good is he? You know, you can have great receivers, but if your quarterback didn't have time to get him the football, how good are they? You know, how effective are they? How much do they help you get wins? It really starts with the offensive line, and getting premium play at that position is so critical. And, you know, it's kind of the same thing. Like, if you're in need of offensive line help, turning to the transfer portal, there's not a ton of just impactful offensive linemen out there. There's just really not. There are some starting caliber offensive linemen. You know, Auburn added a couple in the last cycle, you know, who ended up playing major roles for them. Was their offensive line elite? No. You know, there was a good offensive line, and it's going to take them a little bit of time to gel. Not saying that it's a completed product. It's a work in progress. But my point is that a guy like Caden Proctor, who, you know, I want to say he was number 5 overall in the On3 transfer portal rankings, the number one offensive lineman. And if not, I want to say he was top 10. But, I mean, he was a freshman All-American in Alabama. He started all 14 games at left tackle, the most important position. I do think, you know, a lot of times you show up with that baby, you know, we call it baby weight, and it's like you got to get it off. And instead, he gets to Alabama, and they're like, no, we don't want you to get it off. We want you to go in the other direction. Keep throwing it on. And so I don't think it's so fascinating how we viewed Alabama's offensive line last offseason. And just, we were all just blown away by the sheer size. And we thought they were going to dominate teams up front and push people around, and hardly. And some people did bring up the concern of being too big, and those people ended up being correct. So props to anybody out there that's listening that was like, hey, I was one of those people. I thought they were getting too big, and that could be a problem. It was a problem. And J.C. Latham talked about that when they interviewed him at Pro Day. You know, once you get 340-plus pounds, I mean, just your day-to-day life, the wear and tear on your joints and, you know, your knees and things like that, it's difficult to walk around with that kind of weight. And Alabama had two tackles who spent over a year playing at that weight. And so now it's a matter of getting them down. We've heard that J.C. Latham, he says that he's dropped 20 pounds. He's, I think, around that 340 range. We've heard that Caden Proctor's dropped probably close to something around there. He's probably in that, you know, 350 range, maybe a little bit under, maybe a little bit over, depending on where it was at. But, you know, he needs to keep heading in that direction. And I think him playing somewhere between 330, 325, if you can get him there. But, you know, we also got to remember the goal is to get these guys as big as possible, but allow them to still be able to move. You got to be able to move effectively. And so, you know, a guy like Caden Proctor, what is his ideal weight? Do you want to get him to 310? No. I think probably somewhere in the neighborhood, you know, maybe 325 on the lighter side, but I think somewhere in the, you know, the 330 range. I know that still seems heavy, according to most people, especially in this Kalen DeBoer offense. But, you know, I think for a guy like that, I think he'll be able to move extremely well at that weight. That's probably where I would want to get him.
Yeah, it seems like 330 is really a lot of weight loss, but I really don't think it is, considering I think there was some weight gain for him. Any weight that you put on late is the easiest to come off. So I think the weight that he gained when he was in Tuscaloosa is just going to fall off. And for all we know, he's probably lost some weight at Iowa. You know, he was there long enough to where I'm guessing Iowa was like, we need to get you down a little bit, man. So he's probably already working on it. And there's a good chance that now that he's back in the fold, even though he's not enrolled and going through the programs at Alabama, that doesn't mean he can't talk to and get a lot of direction from Alabama's science and nutrition folks. And I would bet that he's going to be on Alabama's weight loss program, for lack of a better term, even well before he shows up and re-enrolls in time for summer school, which starts around June 1st. So I'm not too worried about the weight. I'm with Clint, though, with this. Different players have different frames and carry weight differently. 330 might be far too heavy for some guys, but I don't think 330 is too much for Proctor. I'm with Clint. I'm guessing, because we don't know until we see it, but I would guess his ideal playing weight is probably right around 330. I bet it's heavier than most. Like somebody like Wilkin Formby, I'm betting with him it's like 315 or 320 at the most. But I think with Proctor, it might be as heavy as 330. Latham is down to around 342-ish, and I think that's kind of been a target weight for him. And I think he's built similarly to Caden Proctor, but we'll see. It's a different offense. First of all, you got to be at the weight in terms of what you're asked to do. Alabama's going to throw the ball. I mean, it's not a wide-open chuck and duck thing where they rarely run it. It's not a full college spread. I heard Caden DeBoer yesterday. Caden DeBoer referred to it yesterday as a NFL spread is how he described it. Clint had a great article not too long ago. I remember it well. It was so good. Talked about how, hey, you thought Alabama was in 12 personnel a lot last year. That was their main thing, but they were barely in at half the time. Washington is in 11 personnel almost exclusively. So that's what we're going to see at Alabama, 11 personnel. Guess who does that a ton? The National Football League. I mean, and that's really what I would call the NFL version of the spread, 11 personnel. And that's what Washington's going to do. And I think it is going to look a little bit like the NFL, which, by the way, sidebar, that's great for recruiting. When you can convince high school kids, we're preparing you to play in an offense that you will see on Sundays in the NFL. That's a selling point. It was Nick Saban's selling point. You know, we'll prepare you for the NFL better than anyone else will. Running this offense, I think, is going to be appealing to high school players and I think appealing to Proctor, who, by the way, one last point about Proctor, still tight with Wilkin Formby, went with Formby to spring break. I think a lot of this may have happened over that spring break period where he's hanging out with Wilkin. I bet Wilkin had a lot of good things to say about Coach Cap and the new offense and Kalen DeBoer and Proctor, who might have had some concerns. I don't know those guys. I wasn't recruited by those guys. I'm putting my whole career in their hands. I think a lot of his reasonable concerns were alleviated because he maintained his relationships with Alabama football players who told him, hey, actually things are pretty good here.
Yeah, I think that there's a level of trust that no other program had, and it was the fact that Formby was close to him and others were close to him, and that level of trust had been built. And so it's not even like a recruiting pitch. You know, you show up as a linebacker recruit, they stick you with Deontay Lawson, let you follow him around a little bit. He tells you about the school. Everybody's telling you the same thing. They're not putting these, you know, you don't think they're not telling players, hey, you need to sell the school. Like, you know, it's very, you know, say how good, great, and wonderful it is. You know, they're not over here like, ah, it's all right. I mean, no one's doing that. And if they are doing that, you're not going to stick a recruit with them. You know, especially a key recruit. So I think recruits expect that to some degree. They're going to hear how good, great, and wonderful everywhere is. No one's really going to be too brutally honest. Maybe the occasional one that's not really happy with their situation, and maybe the coaching staff doesn't know it, and they've got them talking to recruits, and they're, you know, being a little bit more brutally honest. But at the same time, this is different because there's that trust factor there. And you know, if Formby's talking about how good, great, and wonderful everything is, then you trust that because you know your boy's not going to steer you wrong. And he's in the situation, you know, with you. And really, if he didn't like it, he'd be saying, hey, maybe we should try to go somewhere else together if you're not liking Iowa. You know, my point is that the trust factor was there. And Caden Proctor, huge scores from an experience standpoint, from a familiarity standpoint, as far as teammates in the area. Still a new offense, still a new system, going to have to drop some weight, you know, just like all these other guys. I mean, but you were out there with me, Jimmy. You saw Tyler Booker. You saw Jaden Roberts. You saw Miles McVay. They look pretty darn good. They look good heading in the right direction. So, you know, that's big for those guys. And, you know, if they can just do with Caden Proctor what they're doing with the rest of these folks, I don't think it's going to be too much of an issue as far as the weight. You know, one other thing that I want to touch on with the offensive line before we move on is Parker Brailsford and Miles McVay. Because, you know, in that first open practice, I say open practice, the observational period for the media, it was James Brockermeyer and it was Wilkin Formby working at center and right tackle respectively. In this practice, it was Parker Brailsford working at center and it was Miles McVay working with the first team at right tackle. And I did hear one media member bring up the fact, the love for Wilkin Formby, he's already been demoted. And I was like, that's not what's happening at all here, in my opinion. There hadn't been enough time for that to happen. This is, you know, one, you want to send the message that there's competition. So I don't think it's a coincidence that the media shows up to one and it's those first two guys. And then we show up to this one and it's the other two. Those are the two positions that are facing the most competition right now. Obviously, if Caden Proctor comes back in, now you're looking at left tackle. More than likely, he's going to be the left tackle. But without him on the roster, there's nobody else that's threatened Elijah Pritchett. So you don't see a whole lot of movement on that front yet. But with those other two spots, there's competition. And whether it was intentional or not, I'm sure getting the message out, hey, you showed up to one practice, it was two guys. You show up to another, it's two other guys. It's just proving the point that this is a competition. They're both getting their opportunities and let the best man win. And so I thought that was big. I still am a big fan of Formby. And I think Parker Brailsford, I love James Brockermeyer. I will say, I think Alabama's got two good center options right now. I'm very intrigued by that battle. But Parker Brailsford, while he doesn't look the part physically, he looks extremely undersized. And somebody on the message board brought up William Vlahos and, you know, as a comparison. And I'm like, from a length standpoint, yes. From a size standpoint, the stockiness, no. Vlahos was just a lot more sturdily built. But Parker Brailsford, I mean, he can move. He can get to the second level, very athletic. He's 6'1". Natural leverage against pretty much everybody he's going to go against. And he understands he's got to be a former wrestler. In fact, I'm pretty sure that he is. But you can just tell how he uses leverage points. It's natural to him. And that's how he's able to succeed and dig guys out and do what he needs to do. I don't think the size is much of a hindrance as you would probably think.
Yeah, I agree with it. Parker Brailsford is sort of a big favorite. There is a competition at center, and I think that's why we saw Brockermeyer with ones in the last practice, and now it's Brailsford. I don't think that means the competition's over. I think it continues, but I would also install Brailsford as a huge favorite to win the job based on his experience, but also based on just natural ability. I think it's amazing what he does at his size. He really is undersized. I mean, we could tell you guys who haven't seen him yet, y'all will see him on A-Day. We can tell you he's undersized, and we can bring it up on every show that y'all listen to until you go see A-Day and then know what your reaction is going to be when you see him at A-Day. Wow, he's undersized. I mean, we can't really properly prepare you for he is undersized. But I saw him play, or we know that he played against Texas, who has monster-sized interior defensive linemen who are not only monster-sized in Byron Murphy and Sweat, they're first-round type picks. I mean, these are monster-sized elite players. And Washington won the game, racked up a bunch of offense.
Brailsford played well, too.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't speak to that because I don't know what the PFF grades might have been or whatever.
No, he wore him out on a couple reps.
That's amazing. I mean, that's absolutely amazing. That should tell us we should notice, obviously, he's undersized, but at the same time, have no concern about it. Because if you can get those Texas guys blocked, there's no one you can't block. He won't face anyone in the SEC this fall any more worrisome than those two guys that they got at Texas. He'll face good players every week. This is the SEC. He'll probably even face more athletic guys than Murphy and Sweat, but he won't face better, more NFL-ready monster-sized guys. So I don't worry about Brailsford's size, but I do note it because it stands out, particularly when he's lining up between those monster guards. Booker and Roberts make him look even smaller than he is, because Booker and Roberts are so big. Jaden Roberts, by the way, looks like $1 million. And frankly, in today's money, he looks more like $20 million. Jaden just looks the part. as well as any lineman you're going to find in college football. He's one of these guys that's probably 6'5", 325, and he looks 6'10", 400. He looks like an Avenger. I mean, he looks way bigger than he is, which is pretty large. He just carries it so well. And I think he's going to have a great year. Booker looks good. It's a good group. And I feel better about the offensive line all the time, obviously, with Proctor being the cherry on top of the sundae. Got to find a right tackle. I'm with you. I like Formby, maybe as a fun dark horse to win that right tackle. I'm going to bet on Elijah Pritchett because he's an older kid and he's played. So my money's going to be on Pritchett. I won't be surprised at all if it's ultimately Formby. And let's not rule out, maybe they still pick up another tackle in the portal. We can't say they won't.
And, you know, Miles McVay is still in that conversation too. I think the trend, when I saw him with the first practice, yesterday was the first full padded practice. So when I saw him the first time around, it was shorts and helmets. And I thought he didn't really look the part, you know, looked a little heavy in the midsection, wasn't overly big in the upper body, wasn't overly big in the lower body. I wouldn't say that I was overly impressed. You throw those pads on, you start evening things out a little bit. I thought he looked the part in the pads a lot more. Plays way too high in my opinion right now. I mean, he's a long guy, very much like a lot of these players. But I just think from a technique standpoint, he's young, he's developing. I think Coach Capp's definitely going to get out of him what Alabama needs to get out of him as far as his development. But I think it's going to take a little bit of time. I saw some things they needed to work on. You know, he was catching, you know, an earful a little bit from Coach Capp on a couple of occasions that I saw. So, you know, I think he's more of a work in progress. But Miles McVay is in that conversation. And just, you know, with Parker Brailsford and his size, I mean, you've met me. I mean, it's like me being out there at center. You try to stick me between Jaden Roberts and Tyler. I'm not too far off from Parker Brailsford's size, you know, about 15, 20 pounds, you know, 15-ish pounds and about an inch height. But, I mean, they'll be like sticking me between them. And I would, everybody, you know, you meet me and I'm not a small guy, but then you try to stick me between two 320, 330-pound guards and it's like, good heavens, he's tiny. You know, you start getting the Rudy talk at that point. But you know, it's like I said, when I saw him in the shorts and helmet on that first practice, like, man, he looks really small and you see that he moves well and stuff. And then you throw the pads on and you start letting those pads pop a little bit. We weren't seeing a ton, but we were watching, you know, some basic drills. And I thought that just, when you talk about coaching up the offensive line and understanding where you need to be as far as block location to be able to dig guys out on certain blocks, whether it be a reach block, whether you're trying to, you know, down block, whatever. Technically, he's very refined and he moves extremely well. When he was having to reach up to the second level, just very flawless mover. And I didn't see any issues with snap cadence. So, you know, the snaps were pretty on point every time that we watched. And I think that is, from an Alabama fan's perspective, that might be the most critical piece of all of this, is just get the ball in the quarterback's hands and let's see what the offense looks like when it's not already starting behind the eight ball.
We stand so far from the quarterbacks, you really can't see that group, you know. Speaking of, you know, snapping the ball to the quarterbacks, it's probably the group that's we sort of see less, those quarterbacks and receivers, based on where the media is positioned, you know, during the observation thing and where the quarterbacks are working. But I did make a concerted effort to watch, you know, that end of things, and impressive physical guys. I mean, that's, you know, Jalen Milroe has clearly added size since last year, which is like, it's not like something that was needed, but I just think he can't help it. He's just such a naturally large, thick, physical person. An Austin Mack, even from a distance, you're like, how did one of Nate Oates' small forwards get out here? Why is Herb Jones practicing with the football team? Man, Austin Mack is long, but you know, he's not thin. He's a pretty well put together guy. I bet by the time Austin Mack is old enough to be playing professional football, he is going to be big by that time. Oh. But boy, great arm.
I was talking to somebody about it yesterday, and they were nitpicking and making jokes, and they're like, can you imagine, you know, how bad the snaps would have been going to Austin Mack with as tall as he is? And I was like, when you're rolling it on the ground, it doesn't matter. I would say the only thing he had to worry about was back issues, because he's got a lot further to lean down to get it off the ground than everybody else, being 6'6". But I mean, when it's rolled back there, I mean, there's not much more, not much of a difference at that point. It's not like it would have been snapping it. He was already snapping it at the ankles of Jalen Milroe. So, I mean, how much lower can you get? But, you know, it's funny because Austin Mack is extremely impressive physically. I mean, just there's still, you see that there's still room for development with his body, too. That's the crazy part. Like, he's technically supposed to be a true freshman this year. He was supposed to be playing high school football last year. He was in college, spent a year in the, you know, strength and conditioning program of a major D1 program. But you can tell that there's still some work to do on that front. And I'm curious to see exactly what he looks like when he starts getting closer to being a finished product on that front. I mean, really just on all fronts, but, you know, the physical side in particular, because just wow. I mean, and with the rest of the quarterback room, you know, Dylan Lonergan's not big. Jalen Milroe's 6'2". Probably if he got measured, he'd probably check in just under that. Probably, you know, 6'1.5", 6'1", and, you know, 5'8" or something like that. Ty Simpson's probably in that 6'1" range, if I had to guess. And then you got Austin Mack. I mean, he towers over everybody. It's kind of like Daniel Hill with his build at the running back position. Like, as well built as all the running backs are, then you see Daniel Hill and it's like he looks like a fish out of water. I mean, just because he's so massive. It's that way with Austin Mack and his height. But I was watching the quarterbacks a little bit. Caleb Odom is incredible, just physically, and, you know, just some of the things that he's able to do, and the limited I was able to see him, I was very impressed. But all the quarterbacks I thought looked sharp. Now, granted, we're only going to see so much. It's like warm-up stuff. But, you know, I thought that the quarterbacks looked pretty good. I'm curious to see how that all ends up shaking out. But with this entire offense and just the way it's going to operate under Kalen DeBoer, I think the pieces are really starting to come together. And when you start talking about adding Caden Proctor to that offensive line room, you know, I'd wondered if they were going to, you know, play Elijah Pritchett a little bit at right tackle after that news broke. Maybe it's possible that Caden Proctor ends up playing right tackle. Now, I doubt that he spends his true freshman year on the left side. He transfers, and he transfers back and is willing to come off the blind side, which is the more important position. I'd be shocked if that was the plan going in. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he would embrace that and want to do it or whatever. But, you know, I think this entire offense is starting to set up pretty well, Jimmy.
The personnel, pretty good. I mean, you're talking about a team mostly recruited by Nick Saban, you know, partially recruited by Kalen DeBoer. But, you know, it's still a Nick Saban roster. So there's going to be some fun pieces. It is funny that you bring up the guys that stick out physically. I'll say Austin Mack looks so different than the other quarterbacks. Daniel Hill looking so different than the other running backs. Parker Brailsford, opposite, but looking so different than all the other offensive linemen. Caleb Odom standing out like a sore thumb compared to the other receivers, because no receivers built anything like him. Your eyes go to him first in that wide receiver line, just because it's like, wow. Is he in the right group? Is that the right guy? Because he just stands out. But, boy, what a weapon he could prove to be. Super curious as to how that works out. Jeremy Bernard, the Washington transfer, by the way, I think spent some of practice while we were there on the exercise bike. And not so he's got a very minor thing, I'm sure. I doubt he's going to miss any significant time or anything. But just mentioning that he's a guy we didn't see practice yesterday. I like the wide receiver group. There's rumors that the coaching staff loves the wide receiver group, that they're impressed by what they inherited, because I think there's this general idea, you know, you lose Bond, you lose Jermaine Burton to the NFL draft. He didn't throw for a ton of yards last year at Alabama. They probably didn't expect to find much, and maybe pleasantly surprised by how Kobe Prentice separates, by what a physical freak in every positive sense of the word that Kendrick Law is. And then you sign a Caleb Odom, who's so athletic that he can be your big wide receiver. and they practice him there. And Emmanuel Henderson has barely played, I think, highly athletic with nice size for an SEC wide receiver. Just an interesting room, and it needed to be, because I think the plan is to throw the ball quite a bit. And Jalen's got to throw it to somebody, and it's best if he has a wide array of targets. Again, we don't get to see that group too much or too well from where we are, but I felt that watching just Milroe and Ty Simpson deliver the football, I'd notice an uptick in velocity. I think there's even a better fastball that for Milroe, a better fastball for Ty. And it's our first time really seeing Austin Mack and Lonergan. But I'll sum up the quarterback situation. This is how I see it myself. I think there's a clear QB1. I mean, just absolutely clear. It's Jalen Milroe. He's the starting quarterback. But what makes the room great is Ty Simpson should be and is QB2. And I think I would say high quality in the sense that he's probably ready to play and be a guy that could start, could be, and that's who you want in QB2. But I think Dylan Lonergan and Austin Mack both, they're probably ready to be QB2 also. I mean, they're in terms of like, are they ready to be the starter? I don't know, but they're close. So that's why that situation at quarterback is so good to me. You've got the QB1, and then you got three guys who if they're not ready to play, they are almost ready to play. They're just lacking some experience now. I think it's a great QB room, and it's led by a guy that if he takes to this new offense, like I believe he will, is going to be one of the most productive quarterbacks rushing and passing in the country.
Yeah, and this wide receiver room, I'm having such a hard time with it. You know, I did a projected target distribution outlook. If it wasn't last week, it was the week before. I think it was last week, though. I'm not entirely sure. But just the reason that I did it was I found myself throw out a name. I mean, you could throw out, Kobe Prentice. That's a guy who should have been getting more targets last year, more looks last year. I mean, just from a target per snap perspective, he was certainly up there. When he was on the field, they were trying to get him the football, and he was making plays and doing some good things. He deserves a bigger target share. You talk about, Jalen Hill, second year guy, showed flashes as a freshman. Love his fit in this Kalen DeBoer offense. I think his ability to win vertically, win those 50-50 balls, those contested catch situations downfield, I think that's big for your quarterback. Sometimes it's just a matter of throwing it up and letting your guy go get it. You know, Jalen Hill's not an overly big guy, being 6'1", but just very good at the catch point, very aggressive, climbing the ladder and coming down with the football. Think he deserves to be a major part of this offense, and he has been one of my predictions as far as breakout candidates up to this point. It might be like last offseason where it changes 97 times with the receivers, but that's kind of where I'm at right now. You look at Kendrick Law, more of a gadget player at this point, never really proven that he can handle volume, but I think we can all agree he should have been getting more touches last year. Like when they started using him more, getting more creative in how they used him, you know, getting him in motion, getting him on jets, getting him the football, or the, you know, in the backfield, whatever it ends up being, he deserves more touches. Okay, you bring up a guy like, you know, Emmanuel Henderson. This guy's kind of waited his turn, been in the system a couple of years. You know, we've heard great things about him behind the scenes. Considered one of the faster players on the team. Probably deserves to have a bigger role in this offense. Okay, what about Caleb Odom, who's not going to be playing tight end where you expect some development? It's more of now he's playing receiver. He's already there physically when you talk about him playing receiver. Well, I mean, this guy's a freak, and he offers something different, and he offers that mismatch ability and being a red zone nightmare and all these different things. I would fully expect him to be involved in year one. Okay, what about Ryan Williams? He should be a high school senior this next year. He reclassified. He didn't enroll early. It's probably going to take him a little bit of time, but one of the best players, receivers I've ever seen on tape as far as high school football is concerned. And so, you know, you would think at some point just that dynamic ability in this Kalen DeBoer offense, he's going to take over some sort of workload. Well, you know, we're working our way down the list. This doesn't talk about, you know, Bubba Hampton. You know, you got Cole Adams. You got Jaron Hamilton. You got Amari Jefferson. I mean, the list goes on. But you start talking about all those guys that we're talking about. And it's like, okay, not all this can happen. You know, Jalen Hill can't have his breakout season and Kendrick Law get more involved and Caleb Odom and Ryan Williams get touches, whether it be early on or as the season progresses. And, you know, Jeremy Bernard ends up being a volume guy like we all think. You know, one of his biggest issues at Washington was just who he was sitting behind as far as the pecking order. He was expected to be their wide receiver one. Now he's expected to be at wide receiver one in Tuscaloosa. You know, he seems like a guy who can handle volume, so I'd expect him to probably be that guy who handles the largest workload. All these things can't be true at the same time. So it's fascinating, and it's a situation that we've found ourselves in when it comes to Alabama's wide receiver room in the last couple of years. But the key difference is that we know a wide volume of targets are going to be available. 2 years ago, that was the case with Bryce Young and Bill O'Brien as the offensive coordinator. Last year, huge step back as far as Jalen Milroe developing as a passer, as far as Tommy Reese and the play calling. So, you know, not only did you, could you not figure out, okay, what's the pecking order going to be? It's also, I mean, how many targets are they actually going to be getting? I mean, Malik Benson was a starting receiver the entire year, pretty much. And he got like 12 targets, and I'm exaggerating. I think it was like 20, but I mean, he got hardly any volume whatsoever. He was getting like 1.2 targets per game. So this year it's different. It's more important this year. It's more critical to the overall success of the offense and the team. Jimmy, I'm fascinated to see how that plays out.
Yeah, I think what's going to be the most interesting part about the evolution of Jalen Milroe is first year as a starter, Saban didn't want to put too much on. Everything that Saban and Tommy Reese decided makes sense to me. Hey, Jalen Milroe, he's new, haven't played a lot, least experienced quarterback in the entire SEC. Let's not put a lot on him. Let's run the ball. Let's have some design QB runs. Let's not throw it all over the place. Let's just try to not put as much on Milroe because he's not ready for that. That makes all the sense in the world. So Alabama's only throwing the ball off the top of my head. You'd think I'd know the number, but I would guess they averaged around 23 pass attempts a week, somewhere in that number. That's not a lot in modern college football at all, partly because they were trying to run the football and not put too much on Milroe, and frankly, partly because there were too many punts and three and outs, and then you end up not running as many plays as you would like because you're punting the ball.
23.2, by the way.
23.2. Okay.
Pretty good. Right. That's not bad, Jimmy.
I've seen a few games. so I think so. Now, fast forward 1 year. Okay. Now Milroe's experienced. Now he's had a whole year. Now he's experienced as in the postseason, finished sixth in the Heisman race. New offense comes in. I think DeBoer's idea of protecting Milroe is A, I don't need to protect him because this is an experienced quality kid. And secondly, my system in and of itself provides protection for him. He's not going to get sacked a ton. I'm not asking him to throw to his fourth progression, which is a deep out. You know, I'm going to ask him to play within the system, and I'm going to coach him to where he can handle it. I think Milroe's going to go, Clint, from 23 passes a game this year to, I'm just going to pick out a number, I'm going to go 35, which is a tremendous, a 33% increase or 50% increase. It's a massive jump to go from 23 passes a week to 35. And when you go to 35 a week, now all those targets you were talking about at wide receiver go up. All those, now we're getting Prentice involved. Now we're getting Kendrick Law involved. Now Emmanuel Henderson can play. Now Ryan Williams has a few plays to make here and there. I think it's just going to be an increased pass share because this team's going to throw it. This offense are going to throw it more. They're going to trust Milroe more now that he's an experienced player and this system works. And also Milroe share some similarities to a Michael Penix to me. They're not identical by any means. They're not the same guy, but there's some similarities. And I'm going to start with this similarity. Last year, Penix was in year six. No wonder he had the year he had, right? He's in year six and he'd been starting since he was his true freshman season back at Indiana. So a ton of experience in year six. Milroe, year four now. Year four used to be as much as you'd ever get. But Milroe now in year four, big and strong like Penix, downfield passer like Penix. I think Milroe's going to have a Penix-like year but then throw in the rushing yards. And when you have a Penix-like year with significant rushing yards, you probably have Jalen Milroe yet again being mentioned in the Heisman race. And I honestly think that's what's going to happen this fall.
Well, I will say this. A, Jalen Milroe has shown improvement, continuously shown improvement. Do I still have question marks? Yes. I don't think there should be anything wrong with having question marks. I don't think we should just – I have question marks about a ton of things, a ton of people. We can make criticisms. It's okay. Let's not be overly sensitive. Let's also not be overly aggressive as far as wanting to get him to the bench. I think that's way too premature as well. Do I have concerns? When you look at the Texas game, the Georgia game, and the Michigan game, those were three playoff caliber teams. Jalen Milroe struggled in all three. He got something going late against Georgia. He ended up getting player of the game in that game. Give him credit for that, but for a majority of that game, he really struggled. So when you play the elite of the elite teams, he has not played his best football. And so anybody that questions, okay, can Alabama win a national championship where you have to get by a couple of those teams in order to win, can they win with Jalen Milroe as a starting quarterback? I can't answer that question. What I will say is that I very much believe that they can, because I believe in his ability to develop under Kalen DeBoer. But when you look, you know, that is really fascinating as far as the pass attempts, because I put in that target distribution article that I wrote that I was expecting, you know, somewhere in that 33, 34 targets per game, which typically anywhere from 1 to 3 pass attempts are like throwaways. So if you're getting 33 to 34 targets going out, that's probably going to be close to 35 to 37 pass attempts per game, which would be, you know, top 20 nationally, based off of where things shake out, which is kind of where Kalen DeBoer's lived. He's had higher percentages or higher rankings, you know, I think somewhere in the neighborhood of 42.2, I think, if I'm not mistaken, approximately. I think his first year at Washington, I think last year it dipped, like they became a much more efficient offense in Michael Penix Jr.'s second season. So they didn't need as many targets going out. I think it went from like whatever I said, 42 to like 35-esque. But even with that volume increase, if that ends up being Jalen Milroe, like it is possible that Milroe does end up being the guy. But and he does develop and he can handle way more. I think he averaged 21.8 attempts per game. I think Alabama as a team was 23.2, which is where you nailed it. But, you know, if he goes up 10 attempts per game and gets to that 32 range, I could see that. I could see it also being more, getting up in the mid-30s, maybe even the high-30s. But that's going to depend. Like, I could still see him being the starting quarterback, and I could see Kalen DeBoer saying, okay, he has improved tremendously, and we are going to be a volume passing offense, but we're also not going to put too much on his plate as far as that is concerned. So you see an increase of about 10 per game, 32-ish, 33-ish maybe. I think that would be very reasonable, but even if that ends up happening, there's just no way that you can have all these different things happen that we're predicting. One of the Caleb Odom's going to end up with less than 20 targets, or Ron Williams is going to end up with less than 20 targets, or Kendrick Law is not going to see his role increase where he's getting 40, 50, you know, 55, 60 targets a game, or Kobe Prentice ends up not being that guy, or Bernard ends up not being the wide receiver one and doesn't end up having, you know, close to 100 targets, you know, this season or whatever. All these things simply cannot be true at the same time. So it's a matter of picking who do you like. And it is very, very toss up as far as that is concerned right now. You know, let's talk a little bit about the defense, because we did learn that not only we've seen Red Morgan working with the first team defense, and that's extremely fascinating. And you and I have had conversations behind the scenes about that. We'll kind of, you know, talk about that a little bit now. But then also on top of that, we noticed that Xavien Brown was working some with the first team defense in this latest, practice that we got to watch. He was the most college-ready corner that Alabama signed. They signed a lot. I mean, Mbakwe, five-star talent. You had Mincy, the length, five-star talent. But Brown, also a guy that was up there, top 50 player. I think he's a five-star, according to some services. But he felt like the most college-ready. His ceiling might not quite be where some of these other guys are, but I'm not surprised at all that he's the one that's emerging. as a potential, you know, day one starter for Alabama.
Yeah, it comes from a great high school program that you know, he's not the first kid to come out of modern day well prepared. You know, Bryce Young just being one obvious example. But what surprised me about Zabian in particular, in terms of surprise, and we got a good look. As much as I said, the quarterbacks were far away from us, the DBs aren't. We get a real good look at those guys. I'm sort of really impressed by how college ready he is physically. I mean, you just look at him play. You look at him in his jersey and not think he's a true freshman cornerback. I mean, this is a pretty long, put together kid. It is not a physical step back from the Terrion and Kool-Aid McKinstry looking corner at all. If anything, he's longer than those guys. He just looks physically ready to play. It wouldn't even surprise me, Clint, if they came into the spring going, gosh, we have got to add a cornerback from the portal. But Zabian has been so impressive, along with Zay Mincy, along with Mbakwe, along with even Jaleel Hurley, looks a little better to me too. I don't know. I no longer swear that they're going to go to the portal looking for a corner. They might. And hey, competition's always good. You know, hey, you might feel good about Zabian and think, hey, I think he can play, but let's bring in another guy and have a competition. Maybe that happens. But I'm just saying, Zabian looks game ready to me physically. Now, mentally is totally different because it's just a different world. It's a different challenge. And for as much as he might be ready to play as a technician and as good as the competition is in Southern California and at modern day, he ain't played SEC football yet. I mean, he's going to be facing some dudes at wide receiver every single week. And who knows if he can handle that. Other true freshman corners, Kool-Aid McKinstry started as a true freshman. And I think really well. You know, other guys have done it at Alabama, but I'm overall impressed with the whole group. Red Morgan got to be one of the surprises of the spring. Again, another guy, not coincidentally, coming from a 7A premier program where you're practicing against good players every, not just playing against them Friday night, you're practicing against good players every day at Central Phoenix City. And I think that helps prepare these guys for the practice fields at Alabama, where it's just littered with elite athletes. Guys that are used to practicing against that seem to catch on pretty quick. Just one note about Devontae Smith. To me, the surprise is Red with the ones and Devontae Smith not. Can't help but wonder if it could be a little health-related, because Devontae has fought the injury bug most of his time at Alabama, even came off the practice field real briefly. Yesterday for really brief treatment, was right back full participant just minutes later. So no big deal, but can't help but wonder, is Red a one because Devontae's a little nicked up? That wouldn't be hugely surprising, right?
Yes. We've talked about that, and that could be playing a part in this. Now, I will say that when Kalen DeBoer has been asked about those freshman defensive backs, he didn't say, yeah, they're doing well. Now, granted, you know, Devontae's dealing with this or that, and, you know, we expect it to be a big part of the defense, and, you know, that would be kind of your answer, you know, to some degree. Like, hey, just, you know, we certainly think Devontae's going to be a part of that mix eventually. Instead, he's talked about how well the freshmen are doing. So, and you know, you got Bray Hubbard, you got Tony Mitchell, you got other options besides Devontae Smith, and yet Red Morgan's working in front of a lot of them at the very least. It could be, you know, health related with Devontae Smith to a certain extent. I don't know how much though. That's kind of, we have talked about that, and I agree with you that could certainly be factoring in. It's just, you know, it based off his answer yesterday when he was asked about him, I was like, huh, you know, maybe, you know, we'll just kind of have to wait and see. But a lot of people were, someone on the message board brought up Red Morgan's weight. You know, I think on the roster he's listed at 6 foot, about 175 pounds. And people say, you know, has he gained any weight from there? And I will say he does look, you know, a little small out there. You know, he looks a little light. You know, I would say that he's probably gained some weight. If I had to guess, I'd probably put him in that low 180 range, which is a little bit heavier than the 175 pounds. But I did post a photo over on the roundtable message board for fans to look at. And he doesn't look, you know, overly big right now. But I want to point out to people, neither did Malachi Moore. And the comparisons to Malachi Moore, I think, are pretty spectacular. You know, I don't think that they fit each other's skill set to a T as far as all the nuances to what they do well and stuff. But when you talk about just lower rated guys, I mean, obviously, Malachi Moore had Brian Branch working in, you know, as far as recruiting perspective, he had Brian Branch, who was a top 100 player, was everybody thought would end up being an early contributor at Alabama. You know, you got a guy like Woodyard, who a lot of people think is going to be, you know, including myself, a college ready safety. But at the same time, it's really the lower rated guys. It was Malachi Moore in 2020. It's Red Morgan right now, who are both kind of starting to show glimpses. And Malachi Moore, he's built like a truck now, you know, just under 200 pounds or right about 200 pounds. He was about 100, and I think he was listed at 182, 6 foot, 182 on Alabama's roster his freshman season. And I think by the time this season actually rolled around, he had maybe gained a little bit of weight. Maybe he was in that 185 range or something, but, you know, he was listed at 182. And so I don't think Red Morgan's too far off of that. And it just proves that you can be a big time contributor in the SEC, even at his current size. But I wouldn't be shocked at all if he ends up getting a little bit bigger before the season starts.
Yeah, I love the Red Morgan Malachi Moore comp. To me, they're just so almost intangibles. Again, both from 7A schools, both at this point, you know, Malachi started, I think, the first game. I think it was a Missouri game in 2000, and he started game number one, and kind of a cerebral, kind of the cerebral intangibles almost stand out more than the tangibles with those guys. Why Malachi Moore, what a huge thing for Alabama that in year five, he's still with the team because of such a wealth of knowledge and experience, but he's also in year five because it's not like the NFL is trying to drag him to Sundays because the tangibles, right? He doesn't have a ton of length. He's not a 4.3 guy. That's why he's still playing college football, but an outstanding college football player. Look, to be a great college football player, you don't also have to be a premier NFL prospect. It's a different game. It's played on a different day with different people. All that matters to Alabama is how good of a college football player are you? And Malachi's outstanding. I think Red Morgan could just so easily follow in that path. I can't help but wonder if Red, like Malachi, will eventually be sort of a nickel corner or you know, maybe more of a hybrid, the Husky type position. I wonder if Red isn't maybe going to do that even quickly, but I think he shares so many traits with Malachi. I could easily see that happening. But we went into the spring, Clint, with a lot of reasonable questions about the offensive line and about the defensive backs. But for both groups, I feel better about both groups. Not saying that, no one needs to worry anymore. No one needs to have any more questions. I'm not saying that at all. I'm going to say I feel better about the offensive line and the defensive backs after watching practice a couple of times.
Yeah, I think, you know, with Red Morgan, I think you can end up playing Rover or Husky. Don't really see the free range a ton. Just like I don't really with Malachi, even though I think they can handle some of that response. You know, if they play some one high, you know, I think it's the end of the world and they're going to be a huge liability back there. But I also think that, you know, playing to their strengths, you're probably not going to be doing that a ton. But, you know, I am very impressed with the fact that Red Morgan's gotten on campus, made an impression this early, and, you know, seems to be hanging on. And we'll just see if he continues. I mean, when you look at, you know, Sab coming in and replacing Caleb Downs and the impact that you're going to get on that front, and then you get another true freshman coming in, he's not going to be Caleb Downs by any means. Red Morgan is not him. No offense to him, probably never going to be him. That's totally fine. And there are very, very, very few players even remotely have that kind of ceiling. But, you know, just to get that year one impact, so you say, okay, you've got the veteran guy that you've added to the room. You've got Malachi, who's kind of that, you know, probably going to end up playing Husky, but, you know, has some safety versatility. Really, you know, safety's the primary position as far as if you're breaking them up. So you got experience on that front. You got some experience with a couple of guys returning. I mean, experience in the system, really, but you got Devontae Smith, who's got several years in the system. And then you're getting this play out of a true freshman. The depth that safety has been, in my opinion, taken care of. And then you look at corner, still a question mark, obviously, and I completely agree with you. I think the pitch to Zabian Brown, if things are trending towards him being that guy, is, hey, we love what you've done. We really need experience, whether it be from a number three corner standpoint or whether it be from, you know, a starter. We desperately need more experience in this cornerback room to kind of, you know, balance things out between talent and experience. That's always the goal. But we think no matter who we bring in, you have the talent to compete with them and have a very good shot at winning the starting job. But you're also not lying to a potential transfer portal addition and saying, oh, we got a spot for you. You're going to be able to compete. You're going to be given opportunities. And then they come in and it's like, well, Zabian Brown's our guy. You know, I think that you can balance that out. Last year, I was concerned about that, right? You know, with Tyrion Arnold and, you know, they end up getting Trey Amos. I think that's about as good as could have possibly have gotten based off of, you know, we thought Tyrion Arnold was going to be that guy opposite Kool-Aid. But there was enough of an argument and enough of a question mark there where Nick Saban could honestly tell a, you know, potential transfer, hey, you know, you'll have opportunities. And Trey Amos did have his opportunities and he lost that job, but he was still a big part of the defense. Same thing with Jalen Key. I think they can make that same pitch and get that caliber of player again. And if you can add that to the cornerback room, Jimmy, there's not one single spot on this roster where I say there's a glaring hole because you've helped your tackle depth. You've got now five tackles, you know, with Caden Proctor having experience. Elijah Pritchett's got a little bit of experience. And then you've got, you know, talented young players who have come in. You know, I think that spot has been taken care of. I think corner, you're starting to establish at the very least some depth with some of these young guys. But you also might be getting some, you know, starters and potentially impact starters. Safety depth has been taken care of. Linebacker depth, I think, is still a minor question mark. That's still, you know, TBD. But really, you look at this entire Alabama roster, and there's no glaring holes if they can get that cornerback spot fixed. And I think compared to where we thought this roster was going to be, that's pretty impressive.
Oh, absolutely. And I think some of that is the freshmen. And you won't really know. I mean, well, you know, there's scrimmages coming up. I think the first scrimmage is next week. There's a big scrimmage April 6th, and then, of course, A-Day, April 13th. A lot of questions will be answered. They're probably not going to make any real decisions until they see particularly these younger kids in the more game-like situation. So we've got that coming up next. I know we got to get out of here real soon here. But I know, just speaking overall, again, all these questions I had before the spring, they're not answered because we haven't seen scrimmages. There's no final grade yet, but I feel much better about some of the potential problem areas. Like I said, I don't know if there are answers, but it's trending in that direction.
Yeah, it's certainly trending in that direction. And really, the only one that I would still have, just because we haven't seen him, is kicker with Connor Talty. Just because you had Real Reichard, Mr. Stability, for a long time, almost half a decade. And so, you know, actually, yeah, I mean, just under half a decade. So we'll see how all that turns out. But appreciate you, Jimmy, for hopping on here with me. We talked about the offensive line, the defensive backs, talked a little bit about the receivers, got a little bit of quarterback conversation in there. This has been fun. We'll do this again. But, you know, a lot to react to. And as always, I appreciate you, man.
Yeah, we'll be back next week to continue hashing it out.
Absolutely. Well, if you haven't already, go subscribe to Bama Online. Tons of conversation happening over on the Roundtable Message Board. You know, tons of articles coming out, whether it be breaking news, more in-depth stuff, message board posts, but also like this video, subscribe to the Bama Online YouTube channel, and Jimmy and I will talk to you guys soon.